Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in DC. Today, my returning guest is author Tara Dublin. She's a prominent resistor, freelance writer. She's got a Substack, and she's the author of The Sound of Settling, a rock and roll love story. Tara's a talker. I'm a talker. We have a lot to talk about. But before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now, please enjoy my conversation with Tara Dublin. Hey, everybody. Before we start the show, I just need to quickly tell you something was happening with my soundboard in the middle of the show. So there is a brief period, a couple of minutes, where you'll hear a little bit of a buzzing sound when Tara's talking. It's only a brief period, and I did fix as much of it as I could. So FYI. Welcome back to the show, Tara.
Hey, thank you for having me, Kimberly. I'm so excited to get to talk to you.
Well, I mean, we have a lot to talk about. A lot.
We sure do.
And as I said in the intro, you're a talker and I'm a talker. So We're going to talk. Let's start with your book. So, okay, I just have to say this. You were on my show a while back and you were talking about your book. And I said, manifest that shit. And then you did.
Yep.
And then you did.
Yes, I did. So, I manifested it, I think, pretty well so far.
Yeah.
I am self-published at the moment.
Right.
My book is called The Sound of Settling. It's a rock and roll love story. It is inspired by my very real meet cool with Dave Grohl in 2001 at a secret Foo Fighters show for registered members of their post board. And he looked at me and said, I know who you are. As I stood there in the front row and I was like, why? Why would you? Why me? Why? What? What? And this is 2001, years before social media, years before, you know, you and I could just chat with Mark Hamill.
Right.
You know,
right.
This was well before that. This was in the days of the internet post board, and I had never interacted with him. And I was like, why would my rock and roll crush know me? And it turned out he had a little internet crush on me at the time, and nothing ever happened between us. Because when we met in 2001, I was married and the mother of a 2-year-old. Who is now 26.
Wow.
That happens. And because nothing ever happened between us over the years. And the last time I spoke with him was 2009. So I don't have a friendship or a relationship of any kind with him. But at the beginning of the pandemic lockdowns, I was like, I need to do something. I'm not crafty. I'm not going to knit. I'm not going to do a sourdough starter. I need something to do. And this was a story that I had told repeatedly over the years. And people would always say, well, what if?
Right.
What if you weren't married? What if you didn't have a kid? And so I took my origin story and turned it into fan fiction. Mm-hmm. And in the book, the version of me that I created, that's mostly somewhat me, but also other things, she is an unhappily married woman without a child who wins a contest to go see her favorite band, decides to use that as the vehicle to get her out of her bad marriage and start her own path in life. And then she goes to this concert and the lead singer is like, oh my God, I love you. And she's like, well, actually I love you too. And then they go off together, as I did not. And for a while, it's awesome because it's, you know, the rock and roll lifestyle dream and you're on the road and you're with the band and you get all this cool shit. And then all of a sudden, you know, like in about 2 years in, she's like, hey, wait a minute. This isn't what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to follow another man around life. And now I'm here doing that. and now I'm really in it, and things happen, and eventually she's faced with that age-old rock and roll question, should I stay or should I go? And there is a cliffhanger, and my readers have been begging me for a sequel because they want to know what happens.
Yeah.
And in between the time that I wrote it in 2020 and finished it, I have been trying to get a proper book deal for it. Mm-hmm. I felt if I went down the self-publishing road, maybe I wouldn't have the opportunities. And what I learned was that I needed to stop saying no and open my mind to the fact that self-publishing has become a very credible way for authors to get their names out there.
Yes.
And I'm not on TikTok anymore, but while I was, it was a venue to connect with other writers. I'm still doing those things on my other social media accounts. But in the time that has elapsed between my release and today, I have sold 1,007 copies.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And while that's not Stephen King numbers, I would posit that 1,000 of anything is a lot.
Yes.
And that I did it without an agent, without a proper publishing deal, on my own, social media. And I got a really huge boost back in November when I started posting more regularly on Blue Sky.
Very cool.
And the community there was, and that was a lot to do with being on Hal Sparks' show every Monday, because we adore Hal. And he has been such a wonderful supporter of mine throughout the years. But he's been instrumental in pushing Sparklers to Blue Sky and boosting my book there.
That is so awesome. You know, I want to ask you, you about the manifesting process, because I want to just briefly go over what, if I were in your position, the way that I would do it. And I want my listeners to not worry. If you're not into this stuff, we're not going to only focus on this. But I do a whole podcast on this. And and I'm not a coach or anything like that. I'm not like one of those people that promises, hey, I'm going to get you, you know, your desire in 3 days. I'm going to tell you how to. No, that's all bullshit. Nobody can tell you the time frame. But it's ultimately, we manifest from who we believe we are, what we believe is possible. And it's through our identity, how you identify. And so I've been experiencing, you know, I just figured out for 5 years, I've been studying this, putting it to the test, putting it into practice, and I've received really positive but mixed results. And I didn't understand what some of it meant, even though I understood it logically with my brain. So if I were you, and I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm just explaining my process. If I were in your shoes, and this is, and I wanted what you want, because I know you want a publisher and you want the whole nine. Already, you've already made huge strides. I mean, I have self-published books, but I'm not like you. I don't push them in that way. I just don't do it. And so, and my books were I wrote them for different reasons, but that's a whole nother story. So what I would do is I would figure out exactly what I want, right? Like, it's always best to get crystal clear what you want and why you want it. And then it doesn't matter how you do this. You can do this in a thing like a visualization where you relax. And visualizations don't have to have any kind of time limit, in my opinion. I think that if you can just get into a place, if you're a good visualizer, then you visualize whatever it is that you want, like a year or two after you got it. So you've been an author with a, you know, whatever kind of publisher you want now for 2 years, and you've experienced the success. It's not exciting anymore. You're grateful and you're happy, but it's not, it's like you're used to it now. Now it's just natural. Now you're on to the next thing. And so I would visualize it that way, or I would write in my diary as if it happened 2 years ago, and I would talk about it and write it in that way. Or I would make a list. Whatever it is like you can even have a quick little imaginal act, as long as it's set as an intention. I intend for this to I intend to have this experience, right? Instead of focusing on things, it's more we have experiences. Things are the byproducts. So then what I would do is I would figure out what are, you know, okay, I got what I want and I'm happy and I'm satisfied. So how do I feel? And I would make a list of all the things that I would feel. I would feel accomplished. I would feel proud of myself. maybe I would feel abundant. Maybe you're, you know, if money is part of this and you're thinking in terms of money, I would include, you know, that in your visualization. But you can maybe take a look at your bank account and feel like, wow, I have this much money, or whatever it is. Just be real specific in your visuals. And then so you write down this list of how you would feel 2 years into it. And then during your course of your day, and now this is what I'm doing, and I swear to God, it's saving my life, because I was so distraught after this election. And it was around Christmas that I started doing what I'm just about to explain. And basically what it is with that list of how do you feel, where you're not focusing really too much on I'm a best-selling author with a publisher. I mean, that's a done deal in your imagination. Once you experience to where you have felt it real, you can trust that basically your order has been put into the universe. Now your job is to go throughout your day, and anytime you have, you know, like you're driving a familiar route, or you're washing the dishes, or you're cleaning, or you're doing something that doesn't require really specific focused attention, just in general, when we're on autopilot in our thoughts. And often those times are when we say negative things to ourselves, have arguments with other people. Of course, there can be positive stuff, but a lot of us, we focus on our fears. We imagine scenarios that we don't want to happen a lot of the time. So in those times when it is just, you know, autopilot thought, what I'm starting to do now is very casually, I have an internal dialogue affirmation where I'm just like, I'm relieved, or so many great things are happening for me. Or, and like I said, if it's going to be like what you're talking about, I'm accomplished. I'm a best-seling author. And you say it as if it's natural. And then the other part of it is you do not engage with doubt, limiting beliefs. You don't think, well, what if this happens? What if you don't, you can recognize that's your ego, right? Your ego's telling you, hey, that's not going to happen. You're not going to get what you want. Those kinds of thoughts that we have, you can recognize that that's there. You don't have to resist it and pretend it's not there. Just say, I'm not going to identify with that, because I'm really, you know, whatever it is, I'm content. I'm relieved. I'm a best-selling author. I'm a ex, you know, and that's what I've been doing. And it's just mostly there's like this guy named Neville Goddard. I won't get into it, but he talks about the law of assumption manifesting. And he has this whole thing where if you've got all these things you want, and you don't want to be specific, you can say, isn't it wonderful? Isn't it wonderful? So many great things are happening to me. And so I wake up with this every single day. I wake up with, isn't it wonderful? And then I just throughout the day put those thoughts in. And then the last thing I'm going to say about this is it is your dominant thought that creates your state of being. And that's what manifests. So you're allowed to have doubts. You just don't want to spend the, if you have, let's say, 34 limiting thoughts and beliefs during the day, but you have 150 places where you're dwelling that you'd prefer, that's your dominant. You want to have more thoughts and more attention put on what you would prefer. You don't have to pretend it's happening. You don't have to force anything. You just kind of feel it in that moment. Like you've been relieved before, right? So if you say, yeah, I'm relieved, well, you just kind of capture that. And then you drop it. So anyway, that's all I'm going to say about that, because I love this fucking subject so much. And now I'm going to shut up and just
well,
I want to hear what
that you love it. And as I was listening to you, I'm checking off the list of doing that already. I'm doing that already. I'm doing that already. And I'm doing that already. I want you to know that for the longest time, I have been doing all of these things every single day, in different ways, but basically my focus every day after I take care of the things that are paying the bills, which is writing about politics, I focus so much on my book now. I'm so in love with it. And once I finally released it into the world and other people were mirroring back love for what I wrote, then it was much more accessible and real for me to be able to say out loud, this is going to be a streaming series. Here is a soundtrack playlist I'm curating on Apple. Every time I hear this specific song, I visualize the scene in the series that this is going to be. This is what my actors are going to be doing, and I already know who I want to play the leads. I already know who I want to be in it. The other thing that I want to do when I'm there 2 years from now, because I'm going to be this best-selling author with a follow-up all ready to go. So I'm not leaving readers hanging. So that it can be the second season of the streaming series when we leave it with the cliffhanger and the song that ends in the credits, which I know exactly what song that is. I know exactly how it ends. I know exactly how it starts. I know scenes in between. I know who I want to direct episodes. I want every episode directed by a woman. I want women of color behind the camera. I want women of color on the crew.
Yeah.
I want to film it here in Portland as much as possible so that I can give friends of mine who work in the industry work. I worked on the TV show Grimm for 6 years that was filmed here in Portland, and I was a regular background extra. Yeah. I want everybody I worked with on that show, from casting to makeup to carpentry to set deck to background. I want everybody who is still in Portland working on that show. I want to give other friends of mine work. I have friends who are musicians that I want on the soundtrack also, so they can make money in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. There are all of these things that I know that I want. I have sent my book to so many famous people. Mm-hmm. Ellen Barkin loves my book and has tweeted about it, and she is basically attached to play the rock star's mother.
Wow.
There is no one else I want for that part.
She's so fucking awesome.
Oh my God. If you're not following Ellen Barkin, and if you're still hanging up tough on Twitter like some of us are, mm-hmm. she's amazing.
Mm-hmm. She really is.
Right? You don't fuck with the Bronx girl.
Yeah.
So, and I'm allowed to swear on this show, right?
Of course.
So it's all about the fact that people love my book. If you go to TaraDublinRocks.com, which just generates you to Amazon, because I self-published on Amazon, and I know we're not excited about Amazon these days. So that's another reason for me to get a traditional mass market publishing deal, because then I won't have to micromanage where it's being sold, mm-hmm. or how many copies I've sold, or how many pages have been read on Kindle, because it'll be everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that way, also, I can say to people, well, if you don't want to give money to Amazon, you can buy it at Powell's.com,
right?
Which they can, because Powell's is the world's greatest independent bookstore, and it's 4 blocks from where I live here in Portland. That's another thing that I did. I've gotten it into bookstores. You can get it at the library. You mm-hmm. can order it from your local independent bookstore. I have gotten it to Dave Grohl himself a year ago for his birthday, although he has not responded because he's been a little busy lately. That's fine. It's fine. I do believe with all my heart and soul that we will reconnect at some point and be able to talk about it and reestablish a friendship that we had a long time ago. Everything that I do every single day, once I push away the negativity that we're seeing in front of us, mm-hmm. which is an effort that I make every single day. I make a promise to myself to set aside time for self-care.
Yes, we have to.
Right? And that self-care manifests in different ways. So either it's promoting my book, which brings me joy. Mm-hmm. It's getting my nails done, which relaxes me. It's getting a facial, which makes me feel better about the way I look. It's eating healthier instead of eating shit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's doing things that I know are going to continue to feed my soul, even as other people try to suck it out of me.
Yeah, and that's that's the point, because I feel like we are in such dark times, and you know, I don't believe in being delusional. I don't believe in pretending the things that are happening are not happening.
No.
Obviously, we have to face it, and we have to, like you were saying, you have to take care of business. I have been studying this. I've been playing around with it since the 90s, but I've really been studying it since the end of 2019. A friend of mine, it was so funny. I had this friend of mine and I was boohooing. I was in a really dark, dark place in 2019. It was December. And I was crying and, you know, oh me, woe is me. I'm a victim of my life. You know, all these things are happening to me. Why is this happening to me? And she said to me, you should manifest. You're really good at it. And I swear to God, I don't know that we ever talked about manifesting before. And it was weird she said that, but it was like this little ding. And when she said it, I just jumped into it. And it's been exciting, but it's also been frustrating, because the way that, you know, I mean, I listen to a lot of people on YouTube. I've read books. I've listened to, there's this one guy, his name is Neville Goddard. He's like the father of the law of assumption. And he is what I really like. Mostly what he teaches is what I kind of live by, but it's not, I have never read his books. I've listened to some of his lectures. I've just pieced together different things that work for me. And only starting in December did I start doing this thing where I was just describing having these gentle, general affirmations, because there's this thing that I've focused on. And I think we can make things too important and we kind of like push it away. Because if you're in love, if you like have a crush on a guy and you're so needy and you're constantly around and you're constantly putting, it's like you're going to push him away because your, right. your energy is just so, energy is energy. And right. I think my energy became needy, and then I started stressing about it, and then it just started off. So I decided, okay, I understood I needed to stop being needy, and it occurred to me, stop focusing on the thing I want and start focusing on how I feel having that right. thing. Not
Absolutely.
Like, and the difference is that what I used to do, like there was one of the things, I used to want to live in a particular kind of home. And when I've heard the idea of living in the end, I would think like you have to live in the end. You have to live as if you have the thing you want. I would in my mind try to pretend I lived in that home, and all it did yep. was frustrate me though, because it didn't, like pretending to wake up in a bed that I wasn't in or something like that. So instead of focusing, and that's me, like for you, it could be different because we're all different. But for right. me, it wasn't working. It just felt like I was forcing something and I was trying to control the 3D world, and you can't, you can only control your mind. Right? right. So I just started now. I'm like, okay, well, I've got my thing. I've got my stuff. I've got my experience. How do I feel? I feel abundant. I feel grateful. I feel fortunate. I feel, you know, I have all these different, I feel relieved. I feel X, yep. Y. And so that's what, when I'm doing the dishes and when I'm doing little things like that, that's kind of what I remind myself. And let me just say that even though I do have, like, you've got your goal, I have my goal, we all have our goals. But by right. doing this, this is a form to me of self-care, because what it has done is, yeah, I see what's going on, but I have learned not to dwell in it. And when you look at what Donald Trump says, or fucking RFK, or any of these people,
yeah, yeah, any of it, yeah.
it is stomach churning, and it's, I mean, I'm not pretending that it's not happening, but I recognize that it's happening. I feel the way I feel about it, and then I will not dwell, because that's
no,
going to cause
it's,
fear.
It's not healthy. And again, you know, it is all about what you can control.
Yeah,
and it's a choice. Right. It is a choice to look at it. It's a choice to consume it. And only you really know where your line is and when you've reached your yeah. personal capacity.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I don't judge anybody, because there are people who can do it all day, every day without a break. And I respect that. I used to be one of those people and let my anger
me too.
Sort of fuel me. Can't do that anymore.
No,
it's exhausting and it's really not healthy.
No.
And so what I do, there is a point in my day now where I set it aside and I watch something, I binge something that has nothing to do with anything. And then I end my day the same way. And I have been doing this for so long that I don't even remember when I started it or why, but it's been several years. And what I do is every single night I do a little like a yoga stretching routine that I call my gratitude stretch, because I got it from a yogi. Mm-hmm. Like you reach to the sky, you call to the earth, you do all of this stuff. But what you do is, if you feel a spiritual connection to anybody who has been a real person in your life who has left you, you call that a member of your spirit team. You don't have mm-hmm. to be religious. You don't mm-hmm. have to believe in a God. You don't have to be part of an organized religion. Mm-hmm. But I believe our energies go somewhere.
Me too.
When our physical bodies fail us, and I have a spirit team. We all, and if you believe, you have a spirit team that guides you and watches out for you and protects you. Every night, I reach out to my spirit team. I thank them for protecting me that day. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the roof over my head and the ground under my feet. Thank you for the food in my stomach and the clothes on my back. Thank you for the love of my cats, my friends, my family. And then I remind the universe and myself that my mind is worth millions and I will be a millionaire from something that I made mm-hmm. from home mm-hmm. and that there are people, powerful people speaking my name in high places that will guide me and work with me to get me to my next goal.
And that's exactly, I mean, you know,
that is exactly what we all can do, because you will reach that goal as long as you are in it and every day expressing gratitude for what we
have
instead of lamenting what we don't.
Yes. And okay. Wait, repeat that.
The absence of something is not a failure. The absence of something can be a gift.
But definitely, so, I want to repeat what you just said, because it's like, instead mm-hmm. of lamenting on what we don't have, because so many, right. I was so guilty of that for so long. I don't have that. And I don't have this. And then now I have switched it, because now what I do is I notice things to be grateful for all over the place. I notice abundance everywhere. And abundance doesn't have to mean money. It just means, you know, you have an abundance of love. You have an abundance of food. You can look outside in the summertime and see abundance of leaves on the trees. There's an abundance of snow on the ground, or whatever it is. There's an
abundance of air in your lungs.
Yes. So
all of it. Whatever gets you out of bed every day. It's true. And what fuels you, what drives you, mm-hmm. your passion. There is nothing anyone can do to take you from you.
Yeah.
What makes you, you, innately you, at your core, that voice in your head, that feeling in your heart. And the thing is, as women particularly, we have been socialized to be pleasers to others, mm-hmm. putting ourselves behind in the background mm-hmm. and never really like exalting ourselves or bragging about ourselves or congratulating ourselves because we're supposed to be helping others, pleasing others, and we can do that. We can do that. But at the end of the day, you are going to bed with you.
Yeah.
And at night and in the morning, I'm a fucking badass. I'm a rock star superhero. And I'll tell you something else. I start my day by saying that. I light incense every morning. And I say to the universe, I'm a rock star superhero, and I am not afraid of success. I am here to live the life I have created and the life that I long for. I am here today. I will be here tomorrow. And I am not giving up on myself and the things that I want. I do this every day.
And
ultimately, it's me, right? I go to bed with me and I wake up with me.
Right.
I don't have a partner. I don't have anybody to do this for me. It is me. And I am so proud of myself.
And it's so
because nobody thought I could do this.
Yes, and exactly. And it's important to, we're talking about manifesting. We're talking about creating your life. And some people can call that woo-woo. But it's also, these are practical things that, again, we're experiencing extremely dark times. And it is so mm-hmm. important for us to be as positive. I mean, it's like, it's really hard to feel positive sometimes. And we don't always achieve it. You know, I would say there's a couple things that have happened in the last couple of weeks that threw me off, that got me incredibly mm-hmm. emotional. Basically, I allowed myself to have those feelings. And what I tell myself in those times when I'm distraught is I say, I am not my feelings. I am feeling the feelings, but those aren't who I am. Those are temporary. So I accept them. I allow them to be there, but I recognize that in time, it's going to pass. I'm not going to, in the moment, it feels like we're going to feel that way forever, but you have to remind yourself, I'm not going to feel this way forever. I give myself permission to feel this way for a certain period of time, but then once it's over, I'm not going to dwell in it. I'm not going to keep going over, because we do that. We have these like grooves in our brain that, it's weird. It's just like smoking. People who smoked understand that it's not healthy, but it's an addiction. And we get addicted to negative thoughts in the same way we get addicted to cigarettes. I mean, it's slightly different.
It's weird how it's so much easier to believe the negative things about yourself than the positive.
Yeah. And it's only because you keep doing it. You keep repeating it. So, what's so weird? When I was, I don't know how old I was. I think I was 3 to 5 years old. I said to my mother, out of nowhere, I'm stupid, ugly, and ridiculous. And no one, my father, my mother, nobody in my family ever said anything to me to make me believe that. That came from me from somewhere, and I don't know where that came from. But I started off my life having this opinion of myself, clearly that was very negative. And so as I grew up, even though I've had an amazing life, I've had different experiences because my mother is a very different kind of person. And we used to, I was born in Baltimore and she moved us out to Southern California when I was 9 in 1977. And I got to do some kick ass things. Like, for instance, one of the things that I did was my mom's friend was friends with Nichelle Nichols from Star Trek. And she was narrating this piece or this documentary for the Smithsonian Institute. And I guess they had kids that were going to sing the song to that movie, and two of the kids got sick. And so at the last minute, this girl, Joy, who was my mom's friend's daughter, Joy and I went and filled in. And it was so funny because Nelson, you know, Ricky Nelson's sons, they had a band called Nelson.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
this
yeah.
was pre-Nelson. We were all like, I don't know, I think I was 11. So then maybe they were a little bit older than me, but we were like teens or preteens. And there was, I think, six of us. And so it was like three. It was the two Nelson brothers and some girl. And then there was Joy and me and this boy. And it became like the two Nelson brothers and the girl went to private school. And Joy and this guy and I went to public school. And for some reason, we all got into this big fight over it. And all day, we were just fighting and being shitty to each other. But it was fun. But then at the end of the day, we came together in this recording studio and recorded this music for the Smithsonian Institute. And it was fucking awesome. I'm like, who gets to do that? I never heard the song.
You did. You It's little things like that. Like, throughout my life, I have stumbled into situations where, like, oh, there's a famous person there. There's a famous person there. I was also on the radio here for 5 years, and I got to meet a lot of people that way.
Yeah.
And then moving to social media, you get to connect mm-hmm. with all of these incredible people that you otherwise never would have been able to speak with.
Yeah.
And now it's like you can play 6 Degrees of Terror Dublin because of who I'm connected with through this way.
That's one good thing about the internet. I mean, the internet right? is maybe the death of us, but
oh my God, anyone in Gen X can speak to this. We were fine before the internet.
Yeah.
Everything was good. We were the last generation to grow up without it.
Exactly. And without so play dates. We didn't have play dates.
Right. Because of that, this is why you and I are able to have an extended phone conversation, because the kids today don't like to talk on the phone, but we love it.
We're
saying that. You know, just like those little things. But I think because of how we grew up and our parents were like, go out the door and don't come back until dinner.
Right.
And we basically grew up feral and
yeah.
learned how to take care of ourselves from a very young age. It was always about preserving yourself first. And it's interesting because, like, for me, because you were talking about being 3 to 5,
yeah.
I sometimes feel like I'm still 5 years old.
Yeah,
and
me too.
I think 5 years old is when you start recognizing that you have an inner monologue, and all of a sudden your thoughts, that your brain starts talking to you. Like, it didn't maybe, because I just, like, remember one of my first conscious thoughts. My mother said something to me, and I was like, why did she say that? I'm not a baby. I was 5. So I feel like maybe I have been taking care of myself emotionally from that age because maybe I didn't feel so protected by my parents.
Yeah.
It was the 70s and 80s in New Jersey. Like, classic Gen X time. We could not have been more neglected, yet our parents thought they were doing something.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how it's manifested in us as adults and mm-hmm. the way we take care of ourselves now.
Mm-hmm.
And wow. emotionally yeah. taking care of ourselves is different for different people. But I will tell you that I have now evolved to a point at the ripe old age of 55 where I can say to myself, okay, well, it's 12:30 in the morning on a Sunday. Am I going to be able to solve anything right now? No, I'm not. Go to sleep. Tomorrow you'll get up and figure your shit out, but you're not going to do it now.
Yeah.
You have to be able to cut yourself slack when you hit a wall, because it's not an insurmountable thing. You just got to figure out a different way to get around the wall.
Totally.
Because we're the one that puts up our own barriers.
It's so true. And, you know,
we put up our own blocks. Oh, I can't do that. Well, why can't you?
Yeah.
Why? The why question is how you unlock everything. Why do you act like that? Why did you vote away your health care? Why did you do this? Why did you do that? So why do we do anything? Why do I continue to push my book? Because I love it, I believe in it, and over 1,000 people have bought it and mirrored back to me my love for it. They have said, I have a crush on your characters. I couldn't put it down. I read it overnight. I've read it 5 times. So when you are doing something, when you're in the act of manifesting your dreams and other people are seeing your dream coming true and they want to be a part of it, that's a continuation of your manifesting, because it's not just about you. It is about I'm reaching these people and I'm helping them escape from their daily reality, which is maybe harder for them. When I was on the radio here, I would have people call me and say, you know what, Tara, I drive a truck. I work in a kitchen. I have an industrial factory gig. I hate my job. My days are miserable. But I listen to you and you are so happy. And you sound so like you're just so happy to be there on the air. And you make my day better. I took that responsibility very seriously.
Yeah.
That's a huge thing, knowing that what you're doing is impacting another person's life.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily have to be as an author or as a DJ. I mean, no matter what kind of...
It's about you sharing yourself with another person. It's human connection and creating community, which is so vitally
important. It's vitally important
right
now.
Nobody should try to do anything alone.
No.
Like, you might write your book alone, or you might do something alone, but ultimately, it's embracing community and accepting it, which is a huge thing for a lot of people, because sometimes, like for me personally, I was terribly bullied as a child by other girls. And so growing up, I didn't have the trust of other women that I have now.
Yeah.
And that took me a very long time to be able to develop that trust and then mirror back these feelings. And accepting love from other humans is a way to open up yourself. Being vulnerable is actually a strength.
Yes.
And letting people know that I'm not made of stone. I am a capable and yet fallible human. And that's what makes us all able to connect with other humans. And I would encourage everybody. The other thing that I do that is so important to me and a humongous part of my life, and it has been that way for 9 years. Here in Portland, we are very lucky. We have a community called the Low Bar Corral. And that is spelled C-H-O-R-A-L-E. Every couple of weeks, we get together in a bar and sing contemporary songs in three-part harmony with a live band. It's the most beautiful experience. It doesn't matter what songs we're singing. Every single time, I leave on a cloud. It is a joyous human experience. I call it my group therapy. It feels physically good. It doesn't matter how well you sing. Not about that. It's that you want to sing. This community welcomes all voices. And as long as you're over 21, because it's in a bar. But we also do all ages stuff as well. But it is about cultivating community, connecting through something that makes you happy and brings you joy. So whatever that is, whoever's listening, you have something you love that makes you happy. Book club, music, arts and crafts, running, whatever it is. There is a group out there that's doing that. And I would say that now more than ever, you need to not isolate. You need to reach out and connect with community, because that is what's going to ultimately sustain you while we are going through whatever we are going to go through on the daily.
Yeah. And that brings, you know,
true of any time in history. That's true. But particularly now because of the fuckery we're facing.
So that brings me to, now we're going to get a little more political. And I just, I want to, both of us are, I want to be careful in how we talk about this, because I feel like Democratic leadership needs to grow a spine. However, I don't want to paint them as an enemy. I don't want, it's pissing me off when I see the Democrats, been talking about it for years. There's Democratic Eeyores, and those, it's like they're legitimate Democratic voters that come on social media and they assume the worst case scenario, which, you know, in terms of manifesting, can we please fucking stop? But no, because Democrats are fucking Democrats. But either way, instead of saying they're never going to do anything, they're just so weak.
Helpful.
No, it's not helpful. And yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe that's been your experience, because I was bitching and complaining yesterday, like stop being an Eeyore. And then I got a couple Eeyores commenting on my Eeyore post. And I was a little pissed. But, you know, these particular people were like, yeah, well, I did it. And then nothing happened. And it's like, so that's it. Well, are you going to give up now? You have to keep going.
No, the fight did not stop November 5th at all.
Right. No, and it's like we have to not just say, hey, do something. And then if they don't do something, we throw our hands up in the air and say, well, I tried. No, as long as you fucking breathe, as long as you have breath, you can go do something. So I want to talk about.
I can't stand it when people complain and provide no solution.
Yes, it's like, yeah, we're all frustrated. I'd like to see, I mean, AOC is stepping up, right?
She is. We have a handful.
Yeah,
and of course it's women of color. Of course it's women of color stepping up. It's AOC and Jasmine Crockett leading the conversation.
Yes.
As they should be. And it's important to, lift those voices and lift each other's voices at the same time. What we need, here's the thing. Democrats wanted this to be a transition like it was in 2017.
Yeah.
Where he did some bad stuff, but there were guardrails in place to make sure he didn't go too crazy. Those guardrails are gone.
Yeah.
Now he has his enablers helping him, all of his Fox friends, and all of these underqualified people who are just like him. And it's like the remedial class bullies are taking over. Mm-hmm. And what we do is remind Democrats that it's actually their job to listen to us first.
And that's what we have to do as voters. Instead of going on social media and going, I'm so tired of blah, blah, blah. Okay, you're allowed to have those feelings, right? We all have those feelings. But like you said, with no solution or no effort.
So it's pointless.
We have to call them daily. Make that part of your daily practice to let your representative, Senate, whatever, local. Don't forget about local. There's city council, there's school boards. Just choose things that you feel comfortable with, that you know what you're talking about, whatever it is. If you don't know what you're talking about, figure it out. Get your talking points ready. And then always be civil. Okay, now I will say that when I'm online, sometimes I do say fuck when I tag certain people, but it is better. But like, especially when you're calling them, you don't want to be profane. You don't want to be angry. You don't want to be accusatory. All you want to do is put the pressure on. You have to be stern. And these people do work for us and they need to be reminded. But also I would warn people, please be careful not to demonize them, because they are literally our only hope and they're not perfect. They're not perfect.
No.
They're humans and they're going to fuck up sometimes and they're not going to be as strong as we want sometimes. But the alternative is the fucking devil. And I don't even believe in the devil. So that's what we have to remember, that this is an imperfect world with imperfect choices, and no purity tests can fucking, we can't have purity tests in any way. What we have to do is accept what is. What the one thing that I find with people is, especially with progressives, any kind of liberal progressive, they are always kind of in the realm, in the mindset of what should be as opposed to what is. And it's like, I mean, ERA should be in the Constitution. Certain things should be a certain way, but they are not yet.
Right.
And keyword yet.
Should be in prison, because if Bob Menendez goes to prison, why doesn't Donald Trump go to prison?
Yes.
There are all the shoulds, and the shoulds can make you insane. And I think should is one of the most useless words in the English language.
Yeah.
Because usually when you say to somebody, you know what you should do? Their reaction is, you should fuck off.
Yeah.
They're not going to want to listen to you when you say you should do this.
Well, right. And
I ask the why question. Why aren't you doing such and such? When I call my members of Congress, and by the way, any American citizen can call any member of Congress. They don't have to be yours, particularly if they're on a committee that matters.
Yeah.
But when I'm leaving messages, and it's almost always messages instead of talking to a human being, it is. We know that this is true.
Mm-hmm.
Here is a fact. Why haven't Democrats gone after Donald Trump for this fact?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they doing this? Why are they confirming Pete Hegseth when he is horrifically underqualified? Why is Sean Duffy doing what he's doing? Like, it's just the why questions are a challenge.
Yeah.
Why are you okay with this? Because I personally am not, as a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a question of that. And then one thing that people forget, because we get emotional, we get passionate, and this is why I'm so grateful to be able to talk to our friend Hal every Monday, because he knows so many things about so many things and can kind of reframe a thing. So when you get someone like John Fetterman, who says he's going to vote to confirm somebody who's terrible, and everybody goes, John Fetterman ultimately has to serve the constituents of Pennsylvania and their best interests. So in a state like Pennsylvania, where steel is important, this is important, that's important. And then there are certain Republicans who he's going to have to work with to get his state the things that they need. So if he has to play nice on certain appointments, that's why. And if the average American was explained to in that way, maybe you could dial down your outrage and say, okay, well, if you're going to confirm this person, then I expect you to not confirm Kash Patel. Because Kash Patel has done this, 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 and this. So it's maybe choosing some lesser evils. Because again, I think every single one of Trump's appointees is going to end up not serving a full term anyway. Because they're all going to screw up. Pete Hegseth is absolutely going to drink on the job. Sean Duffy has already made a humongous mistake today. So that's our job. Our job is to remind everybody of the glaring mistakes that the Republicans were making and figure out ways for Democrats to correct them. So what can we do? Ask our representatives to vote for the things that are important to us and make sure that Trump can't take away the things that make our daily lives tolerable. So fight. And they're fighting. They fought the benefits freeze. More of that. More of that. And every time Democrats do something that give us a little bit of leverage, we have to blow that up because Democrats are not very good at bragging.
That's a new thing that
we have a lot to brag about. And the number one thing that infuriated me about the Biden administration is that Democrats did not brag about the Biden administration.
Yeah, they never do.
We made history over the last 4 years, and I could go down the laundry list of Joe Biden's achievements. But instead, I would ask people to look them up for themselves and keep sharing them in comparison to Trump's first failed term and what he has already failed at doing in the last week and a half alone.
Right.
And if we stay rooted in truth and facts, that's how we keep Democrats honest and we hold them accountable. We don't have to yell at them. We don't have to insult them. And we don't have to make any shit up.
Yeah. And it's just, I think, you know, I want to talk briefly before we go about, there's an article that I got from Democracy Docket. The fucking Mark Elias is so awesome. It's 10 things we can
do. I'm so grateful for the existence of Mark Elias, as we all should be.
He is. But I want to bring one thing up, and that is, you know, as I mentioned at the start of the show, after the election, I pretty much lost all hope for democracy. I literally just thought, this is it. It's over.
Yeah, and, I did too.
You know,
I
and so too. Bob Seska, who is my boyfriend, was a little bit less doom than me. I mean, he understands what's going on. And he was actually quite nervous that this outcome was going to happen. I was much more confident in the voters getting Kamala in office, but I was clearly wrong. So,
we still should have gotten a forensic audit. There's no way he won all 7 swing states, and definitely not on election night. And all of the bragging and all of that should be investigated by Democrats for sure.
Absolutely. But beyond that, what is giving me hope now is the fact that, you know, he rescinded the freeze on federal grants. Now, what part of the reason, just you're talking about the, because I know they cheated. They cheated in 2020. They just didn't win. And they cheated.
And they cheated in 2016.
And they did.
He wasn't friends with Elon Musk in 2020.
No, they always cheat. So, sometimes the cheating is legal, and then there's the other kind that I don't know that we'll ever prove.
Right.
But we have to assume that they're always going to cheat, whether it's legal through, you know, voter suppression laws or whatever. We have to always assume they're going to cheat. So did they cheat? But what I thought was, okay, we're never going to have a fair election again. And obviously 2026 is going to tell a tale. But what the hope that I had was that the fact that he rescinded the freeze on federal grants tells me that he feels pressure. If he thought everything was locked in, he wouldn't do that. He would just do whatever the fuck he wanted. And the other thing that I just want to say here is, what you're talking about, talking to Democrats, doing these phone calls, it's all the rah-rah stuff, right? And we do need to hear the rah-rah. But please be mentally prepared. This is going to be damaging. As you said, no guardrails anymore. we are going to see horrific things in these 4 years. There's, I mean, maybe if we can get, if Democrats can get back into, or at least, you know, liberal independents can get into our government and change Congress and the Senate and all of that, we might be able to see some real resistance happening. But right now, for the next 2 years, it's going to be a fucking shit show that we've never seen before. And it's going to be really difficult because there's, it's going to involve people's lives and livelihoods, and it's going to be ugly and terrifying. And, you know, try as best you can. That's why we're talking about self-care at the beginning of this, because, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm putting it in terms of manifesting, but as you said, you know, go join groups where a great human experience, whether you want to go to therapy or write or knit or walk or do whatever,
whatever
it is that
whatever
you do,
it is,
because it's going to be fucking horrific.
And yes, we have to there be is one prepared. Sliver of positivity as well that we did not have during his first failed term. And that's some, not all, not enough, but it's starting. Some of the cult is starting to realize exactly what they voted for this time.
Yeah.
Because they're losing protections. They're losing health care.
They're benefits. Finding out. Yeah, they're finding
there
out.
Was a viral video the other day before the grant freeze was unfrozen. This MAGA woman crying on TikTok about how she couldn't use her SNAP card when she went to the grocery store and how were her kids going to eat and why did she vote for him? And it's like, well, good. You know, you're finding out what you voted for, and I'm sorry that your kids are going to suffer for it, but maybe this will wake you up.
Yeah.
It's finally impacting them at a real level.
Yeah.
So it's going to impact them at the grocery store. It's going to impact them at the pharmacy because their prescription meds have been raised by 4,600% price-wise. Nothing he's doing is helping them slowly. And again, he'll always have the diehards that'll never leave him. But I do think that there will be enough normal people who are going to see how it's going to impact people that they love. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to vote for Republicans again after this. Well, I really believe that.
And then on because top it, of it, well, on top
because
of
MAGA people will die too, just like they did from COVID in red states. And I don't know why they won't learn, but you do not let RFK Jr., who does not have a medical degree, you do not let him be in charge of the nation's healthcare systems. You just don't.
No, and I think that it's important to remember that, like, for instance, when Joe Biden was running, I hate saying this, you know, I mean, I trust me, I believe there's cheating, and I posted this on Blue Sky yesterday, but I put the differentiation of the votes from what Biden got to what Harris got, and, you know, she got like 75 million, he got pretty much almost 80 million, and so, yes, there's cheating, there's voter suppression, but as Tom Bonier pointed out, I think it was over on Twitter, he was talking about, it was Pennsylvania, I believe it was North Carolina, but Democratic registration was down by a lot and Republican registration was up by a lot. So Democrats did sit home. But beyond that, in 2020, we had, I think, you know, I always take my mechanic, my car mechanic, who they're Republican, but they didn't like Trump. And I don't know how they voted, but I have a feeling they felt comfortable voting for the white older man. I don't think they would ever in a million years vote for her.
And, no, and know, that's just disgusting, right? How racist everybody still is.
Yeah, but I think what the whole point of this is that the differentiation in 2020 compared to 2024, the reason why Joe Biden got all those votes was because he's that, you know, kind of grandfatherly, kindly older man. And this country is still... And I hate saying this because, you know, I'm a fucking rabid feminist and I want to see a woman president. But I feel like the way that we're going to get there is by first getting, you know, I mean, I don't want to say we need to elect a white man. I really don't want to say that. But I feel like whatever it's going to take for us, I would rather get there and then go get things fixed. Because that's one thing that I didn't see Joe Biden do. I mean, Joe Biden did a fuckload of good things for this country. Unfortunately, we're going to see some of that reversed. But he did so much good. I would have liked to have seen more protections and, you know, some of those guardrails fixed in a different way. And there are certain things that he couldn't do everything in 4 years, though, you know, and then on top of it, it wasn't even 4 years. It was 2 years because of the midterms. So, right. You know, I mean, he could only do so much. But what we need is we need to get rid of the Electoral College. We need to get
we needed to get rid of that forever ago. It's so antiquated and racist.
Yes. And so there are actually ways around it. And I'm not going to get into it because I don't know how to talk about it. Well, Bob knows all about it and he's talked about it on his podcast. But either way, the thing is once we like shore up some of those loose threads, and then I mean is America ready for a woman? Yes, I think we are.
I mean, we are. We were ready for Hillary. We said so with the popular vote.
Our system makes it more difficult for a woman to win. In this particular case, he won the popular vote by a very small margin, but still he won. I don't, you know, it's upsetting to me. And yeah, there was all kinds of circumstances. She only had 3 months, blah, 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 blah.
Blah, 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 blah.
But they're the bottom line.
And they fucking cheated. And they fucking cheated.
And they cheated in a big way legally. They knocked like 2 million people off the fucking. I think Greg.
All of it makes me so furious that people chose this.
Greg.
That anyone would choose it.
I know, but Greg.
And that they don't understand that Democrats always end up cleaning up the messes Republicans make.
Yes, it's constant. But
I wish they would learn from the history.
Greg Palast did, I think I'm saying his name right, did a whole breakdown, a forensic thing of it on his own, and he has receipts, and he determined that this is all legal cheating here I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Without the legal cheating, without the voter suppression laws and all of that, she would have won 286 electoral votes.
It just makes me sick.
Yeah, it makes us all sick. But the thing is that I think that in the midterms, the whole point to what I'm saying here is in the midterms, I think we're going to see those right-leaning independents and those never-Trumper Republicans, they will probably, because they're going to hurt, I'm going to go ahead and assume that they're going to come out in big numbers so that legal voter suppression, just like in 2018, we had general election turnout in the midterms. And so I'm hoping, and to me, that's the big test. What's going to happen in the midterms? Because obviously every year there are elections. There are special elections somewhere happening somewhere. Everybody should understand and know what's happening locally in your own state. You should understand, you know, if it's a federal election, if it's a federal special election, if it's a state election, whatever it is, you should know, you should vote, whether it's school board stuff, city council, all that stuff, however it works.
Yeah, every election
every
matters.
Every election. And then I think that, you know, are they going to cheat? Yes, they're going to cheat again. So we have to be able, and we can't live our fucking lives in this country where it's just about we have to vote in such big numbers to overcome their cheating. So the next time a Democratic candidate wins, and I'm really hoping that there's a next time, that candidate needs to get in and fix some of this shit. I mean, they can't go and get rid of the Electoral College because that is, you know, that's an amendment kind of a thing. You need an amendment to do it.
We should be voting on hand-marked paper ballots exclusively so that nobody can fuck with our votes.
Yeah, and there's got to be all different things put in place to make it easier to vote, to make it harder to overturn. So, I mean, but, you know, that's for... The next,
that's for
the next
people
president.
Above our station.
Exactly. So you know, I just want to throw in for the last thing that I want to talk about. I'm not going to go over this whole thing, but you should look it up. It's Democracy Doctrine, and it's called 10 Things We Can All Do to Protect Democracy. I'm just going to say this one thing. It's number 3. Don't do Trump's work. And I'm just going to read this whole paragraph. It says, this is more than simply resisting Trump's actions. It's refusing to accept his false assumptions. When he says he wants to abolish birthright citizenship, do not accept the premise that he has the power to do so. Stay grounded in the truth. The U.S. Constitution is clear. Trump is powerless and the courts will reject his efforts. So,
correct.
It's so
and
important.
Remember, Joe Biden made those historic judicial appointments before he left office because he knew this shit was coming.
Yes, and we can't, you know, the media is doing Trump's job for him. The media is.
Of course they are. It's been awful. That's like a whole show by itself.
No shit. And Dan Rather's calling for, you know, independent media has to grow.
And he's right. He's so right. I responded to you about that because he's right. Our voices matter. And people like you and I and Bob and Majid, we're the ones that should be on MSNBC right now because. Seriously.
Well, I'll give it to you. I don't want to do it, but you guys can do it.
I'll do it because here's the thing. That shit with the Lindy Lee stuff that we just saw.
Oh, my God.
Right after the election.
She made me so fucking angry.
I'm fucking rip shit serious.
Wait. I want to talk about her for a minute because, and I
we
know
have to.
I want
people need to know.
Yeah, and I want you to say your thing, but this is what I'm going to say my piece first. So
go
basically,
for it.
I remember I was in chat rooms with her, mm-hmm. and what and
like, I think I was in them with you.
Yeah, and she never, like, what this is what my experience was. So I friended, you know, I followed her. She didn't follow me back, and then she would only communicate with the men, and she would mm-hmm. call them cutesy little names. So, like, I'm not going to name a specific man, but let's just say a man's name was Chris. She would respond and say, "Oh, Chrissy," and she would
yep.
she would be all flirty with them, and she would yep. cater to the men and mm-hmm. ignore the women unless the women had massive accounts. Then mm-hmm. she would pay attention to them. And I remember mm-hmm. really being turned. I didn't think she was a Trumper, or I didn't think that she was a grifter, which is really what she is, because I don't think she's a
yes.
Trumper. I think she's a grifter. I yep. didn't think that way. I just didn't like her. And, mm-hmm. and so many Democrats liked her. And of course, her tweets were great. She made great
points.
She
was stealing them from other people
of course.
Who were better at it.
Yes,
that's
but
why.
It's like you would see these things coming and it would be easy for some people who don't know better to go, "Oh, well, you were just jealous." I was never jealous of her. I just didn't like her. And
yeah.
it was like, and I couldn't put my finger on why outside of this like cutesy, flirty shit that she was doing. Because look, you and I are in these rooms. We see how people act. I don't see yep. women acting like that. Just
no.
her. It was just her. And
yep.
and it was so infuriating. And then I saw, and I'm going to let you go into it, but I saw mm-hmm. you had talked about this online. And what was your experience with her in those chat rooms? Because you had
all
more
right.
of an experience than
oh,
I did.
Oh, I had so much more of an experience. So we're in these rooms and it's, you know, it's a lot of people, right? And there's a lot of crosstalk or whatever. I start getting individual DMs from people going, "I think she's stealing tweets." Mm-hmm. And I had the same reaction to her that you did, where it's like my spidey sense was like,
yes.
something isn't right. And I try to give, especially women, I try
yeah.
to give them the benefit of the doubt because we're supposed to be sisters and all that.
Right.
So people are like hitting me up privately going, "This tweet is a lot like this tweet that I wrote." And I would go and look and I'd say, "Yeah, it is."
Yeah.
And then I'd go and look and see who she was responding to, how long it took her to follow me back, all of those things, and noticing what you were noticing. Mm-hmm. So we just started watching a little more closely and watched. And then all of a sudden, her follower account exploded.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, now you're not just stealing tweets. Now you're buying followers."
Right. Yeah.
And she didn't. And then I said something to somebody privately, and then that person said something to her privately. And then she DM'd me and said, "Hey, Tara, why aren't you telling people I'm stealing tweets?" And I'm like, "Because you are." And then she went back to one of the DM rooms and grabbed 50 Shades of Whey and said that I was a racist, tweeting racist shit and telling people that she's doing this because I don't like Asian or Black people.
Oh, my God.
Or any people of color, and I'm a racist. Now, my name might be Tara Dublin, but I am a Jewish woman. And I have always believed that it's my responsibility as a human to be an ally to all the communities I wasn't born into. That's just me. Your lies don't have color. Mm-hmm. Your lies are not ethnic. Mm-hmm. Your lies are just lies, Lindy mm-hmm. Liar. Mm-hmm. And so I saw that she was a climber looking to get ahead.
Yes.
Other people were like, "You're mean, Tara. You're a bully, Tara." And I'm like, "Okay, I'm just telling the truth about what I see, but I'll leave the DM room and she can stay. Mm-hmm. And 50 Shades can stay. And you can all talk about me, about being a racist and how I'm Dave Grohl's stalker, even though I haven't talked to him since 2009 and I don't know where he lives. I'm a very bad stalker, but okay." And then all of this comes out about her, right after the election. And it's very hard for me to not be like, "I told you so."
Yeah.
So I did. I said, "I told you all that she was a lying, stealing, opportunistic grifter." And there she is on Fox playing the victim.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that she did
yes.
when she was still quote unquote a Democratic influencer. She played the victim. "Oh, Tara's a racist bully." No, I'm not. I'm just telling the truth about you. I don't talk shit about people. I tell the truth about them.
You do not. And at least in my experience, you do not.
I don't have a reason to talk shit. You give me enough material to tell the truth about you. And seeing her on Fox saying that Democrats are bullying her and playing the victim, it makes my teeth itch.
I know.
Because I know what she is.
I know.
And I will tell you, like, Democrats come back into power, she's going to try to climb her way back in. She was claiming that she had an official role at the DNC being, like, the woman's chair. Mm-hmm. Bullshit. I didn't see her at the DNC, and I was there the whole time. Jamie Harrison tweeted that she had no official role at the DNC. So I would say, if you are a person who was following her, I'm very sorry. You should follow me instead. I am being suppressed as fuck on Twitter. Because I'm a liberal voice. Trump blocked me on Twitter in 2015. Elon Musk's mom blocked me. Why do you think that is? Is it maybe because I say things that are so close to the truth that they don't like it? I have been harassed by Donald Trump's staffer, Tim Murtaugh, steadily over the last week and a half. I won't block him because I want people to see that this member of the Heritage Foundation who works for Trump and is implementing Project 2025 is harassing an American citizen. Lighting these things up is a good thing.
Yeah.
Telling people about Lindy Lee, telling people about Tim Murtaugh, speaking truth to power about what MAGA Republicans are doing while holding Democrats accountable. These are all things that we can do and should be doing.
And, you know, I got to add, I don't know if you know about this, and I don't know if I'm going to say his name right, but, you know, is it Judd Legum?
Yeah.
The other day he said, so John Cooper is one of the most widely followed accounts on Blue Sky with 420 plus. He also steals my work without any credit or attribution. This isn't the
John
first
John steals
time.
From Judd?
Yeah. And so so Judd put up some tweets proving it, and I saw that, and then I contacted a few other really prominent people, and they're like, yeah, he steals my stuff too. So I blocked him on everything, and everybody loves him, but he steals,
and Robert,
I'll
tell you one other person. If we're gonna start outing these people for who they are, keep a close eye on Angela Bel Camino.
No, she's already out. She's a right winger. She's
not a bold lib at all. All of those bold lib videos, what the fuck were those?
I know.
She's hanging out with the guy with the face tats, the rapper with the face tats, Forgiato Blow or whatever. She's hanging out with all these MAGA people, but she's a bold lib?
Yeah, she's
what are you doing?
She's one of those grifters. And, you know, I mean, I was following her. A lot of people were following her, and I would see her videos, and I never understood them. And then
me neither.
I mean, I never liked them or shared them, but I followed her because I just, you know,
I thought she was one of us.
Yes, exactly. And so then I don't know when it happened, but it was like somebody just emailed me about this, but it was like a month or two ago, and it came out that she's a MAGA, fucking grifter, and she was kind of basically flipping off everybody, going, fuck you. So, for sure, that woman is bullshit.
You know what? And that makes me extra angry because the first time Trump got arrested of the four times, she put up a video of herself dancing down the street, all excited that he got arrested.
Yeah,
I made a video of myself eating a steak at a bar because it was so tasty. To watch him getting arrested.
Yeah.
Both of our videos were singled out, and this guy on Newsmax shared them saying, lonely single liberal women are celebrating Trump's arrest. And she acted like
you're
she was
so
all
lonely.
Butthurt by it when she fucking loved it, I'm sure. She loved being on Newsmax.
Of course.
I didn't, but she did. And so, and for me, I was like, I'm out here defending you and you're not lifting me up, and that's weird, and I don't really like that, and whatever. And now I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
We have to be very careful because liberals are so quick to, you know, jump on. I mean, everybody fucking loves Steve Schmidt because with his $25.
Oh, not me. Oh, no. Oh, he fucking targeted me.
He's a jerk.
And called and said that I was crazy.
Yeah.
And that, because he was totally pawing, trying to push Joe Biden out. He was so behind it. And he denied that he had anything to do with anything. And he's such a piece of shit.
Yeah, he is.
And he harassed me on Twitter and went after me. And I was like, fuck you, dude. You're not on our side. There's a reason Lincoln Project wants nothing to do with you. So,
yeah, and I had him. I've talked about this before, but I had him on my show because I was one of, you know, I enjoyed, you know, his $25 words on MSNBC. And it was funny because basically I invited him to be on the show and we had a phone conversation prior to him being on the show, and he was getting ready to go out of town, but he was super nice. And what's really funny is, you know, he has that really strong mid-Atlantic accent. He didn't have it. I mean, he had a mid-Atlantic accent without a doubt, but it wasn't as pronounced as it is on television, because I was thinking, is this really Steve Schmidt when I was talking to him? And then he would say a couple of different things and I was like, yeah, this is him. But he was super complimentary, super friendly on the phone. So he's like, yeah, I'm going to be out of town, but when I come back, let's do a show. So in the interim, this was during the Democratic primaries. So he went after Elizabeth Warren for something, and I said something about it. I called him on it publicly, which he did not like. And
of course not.
He definitely, you know, he came back and I don't know what he said. He wasn't a jerk to me in public. He just argued his point. And then I noticed when I had him on my podcast, he was very different than he is on those shows. He blamed Democrats for everything. He just was a completely different person than he had been, because I wasn't mean. I knew he was going to be on my show, but he was talking shit about Warren. And I'm like, you know, why are you doing this? What if she's the nominee? And it wasn't anything bad. It was just, you know, he was giving her some kind of, criticism on something. And it's like, oh, that's the true color. And then, of course, that whole report came out. I don't know if you remember, but the whole Lincoln Project thing where he was so fucking obsessed with generational wealth. He cared more about generational wealth than anything else. And look, you know, those Lincoln Project guys, I always said about them, I'm going to keep, and he's not with him anymore, but I said, I'm just going to keep my eye on them. Because I'm going to wait to see what happens after the Trump administration. And no matter what you think of them, I mean, I know people vehemently do not like them. And I know they make money from what they do. But I don't consider them an enemy. And the reason why is because, I mean, I hate to say this, but for those of you, and I'll never, I can't remember the guy's name, but Rick Wilson did an ad. It was an attack ad on a Democratic candidate. Maybe it was the 90s. And, you know, he had lost, I think, like both legs and his arm. And I can't remember the guy's name. But it was a fucking awful attack ad. And I hated Rick Wilson for this. I hated it. And then I also hated that I would publicly go up against, or I would say something counter to what Rick said. And he would quote tweet me and basically treat me like shit. But if Bob...
Well, that's what they did.
But no, this was when he was at Lincoln. And Bob would do it. And Bob would basically say the same thing, and Rick would leave him alone.
You're just a girl, Kimberly. What do you know?
Yes, and so but the point. The point here is that, despite all of that, I still recognize them as allies in fighting for democracy. Because I don't care how much money they're making; they have a right to make money. What they're doing is a certain kind of a messaging that Democrats are not doing. They do understand. Max Cleland, that's his name.
Max from Georgia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yes. But the thing is that they are giving Democrats talking points. They are showing muscle. And Democrats need to be more like that in there. They don't have to go to attacking veterans, okay? But they need to be more stern, and they have to resist stronger, and they need stronger pot. They need to be like AOC. And so
and those of us out here who are speaking truthfully and forcefully without being disrespectful, it can be done, which is why I should be on MSNBC, considering most of their lineup follows me back. Rachel Maddow follows me back. The Readout follows me back. Nicole Wallace, Stephanie Ruhle, Simone Sanders, Lawrence O'Donnell knows who I am. So why am I not on MSNBC, but you put Lindy Lee on all the time? Oh, Katie Fang follows me back too. I'm right here. I have always told the truth. I am a consistent presence. You have never seen me all over the map. My messaging is consistent. From the day I joined Twitter in 2009 to today, I am this person. I have always been this person. And I have not grabbed opportunities that were put in front of me just to make money. I would never sell out my country or my party for any reason or any amount of money, because you're not going to make me change who I am. Not for one second, not for any reason. So I'm going to keep trying to get this voice out on the airwaves of MSNBC, because the more of us who are cutting through the niceties and the bullshittery, the better. We have to get straight to the point, because we don't have time for niceties and we don't have time to fuck around.
No, we don't. No more time. We have to get the work
done. Get it done. I am a Taurus. I am a Jersey girl. I am all about forward motion. I may live in Portland where everybody's passive aggressive, but I'm aggressive. That's it. There is nothing passive about anything that I do. I can't help it. If I care about something, then I care about it. And you're stuck with my passion for things that I care about. And if my passion for something is off-putting for you, step aside, because I'm going to keep going. And when I see that something is wrong, I will keep working to make it right.
And that's so many of us are doing that. And so we all kind of need this energy. And I'm going to start wrapping this show up now, because we would talk all fucking day. So
we would. So go buy a book, take a break, do some self. The best self-care you can do right now is taking a break, but you're also helping somebody else.
Yeah.
In our world. So for me, that's everybody who is listening to this, who has made it through this whole conversation. Go to TaraDublinRocks.com and buy my book, The Sound of Settling. It's a beautiful, non-political escape into our recent past. It's set from 2001 to 2006. So there's no social media. There's no texting. There's no Trump. So go take a break. Go on tour with my rock and roll love story. Everybody loves it. And it will help me get a little bit more visible. So doing something good for another human being is also part of our manifestation, because the more of us who are invested in good things, the better.
And let me just add, since you did yours, I'm going to pitch my book. But
yeah, plug away.
Especially whenever you're reading an indie book, please, if you like it, please review it on Amazon.
Oh, yes, because it's please. Extremely because important. Because the MAGA people love to come and mess with my book.
So, and they
love to leave fake reviews that have nothing to do with what.
And they don't even
read
it.
Oh, she's a political mouth. It's a rock and roll love story. There's sexy sex in it and Foo Fighters Easter eggs. Come on.
So my book is called, I have several, but the one I'm going to pitch, this one, it's funnily enough, it's not political, but it is about teen abortion. So it's called Peyton's Choice. And basically, I wrote this book because I was just thinking, you know, so much emphasis is put on regret when women have abortions. And I wanted to write a book about a young woman who got pregnant. And I'm giving it away, but it's the story, right? So she doesn't have regret. And, you know, it's like I keep hearing these like, oh, you know, people on the internet who talk about it's the hardest thing. And I'm not going to take that away, because in some cases, for some women, it is extremely hard. But for other women, it's not hard at all. And then it's just a big relief for them. So this book is set. That's okay. The main girl is very, very loosely based on me, because I never got pregnant in my whole life. So obviously I never had an abortion. But it was set in Torrance, which is a Southern California beach town. And I did try to make it timeless, although there's only a couple references to, I think, a text in Facebook, but really not much. I wanted to just keep it, you know, focused on the story. And it's very also loosely based on my group of friends. I had like three girlfriends, and you know those, it was the four of us and in high school, and we were just so close and it was so much fun. And I just wanted to come from a place of this guy that she was with, the boyfriend that she was with, he would say some shitty things to her sometimes, but he wasn't a bad person. So because so many of us experience that, right? You're in a relationship with a good guy or a good woman or whatever. And sometimes but it's patriarchal. I kind of put in patriarchal shit, but not that he's not a jerk. He's just, he can be a jerk. But at his core, he was a good person. So I wanted to kind of throw that in there. And anyway, so Peyton's Choice, and that's on Amazon too. and it's Peyton awesome. With an E. So buy our books. And then also, you're just everywhere, right? So you're on Twitter. You're
I'm
on
everywhere. I'm not on TikTok anymore. I'm Tara Dublin Rocks on Twitter and Blue Sky. Tara Dublin Rocks 1 on Instagram. And I have a Substack, taradublin.substack.com. And I write every day. I'm also writing for the Sexy Liberal Political Voices Network Substack.
Awesome.
So everyone should sign up for that Substack as well, because everybody in our Sexy Liberal family partakes. Yes. Our friend Hal and John Fugelsang and Frangela and Bob and obviously Stephanie Miller.
Yes.
We're all part of a really amazing group of people that I feel incredibly lucky to be a part of.
Stephanie Miller. I mean, I think Stephanie Miller and Allison Gill are two of the most amazing.
Oh, I'm so grateful
prominent
for both of
women.
Them.
And Stephanie is such a uniter. You know, she's just really good at, and she's so silly and funny, and she makes everybody feel special. So I love her. And you know, it was awesome talking to you.
It was great talking to you too, Kimberly.
I've got all your links in the show. I don't have all of them, but I have most of your links in the show. I have your book. I have Blue Sky. I have your Substack. So everybody
awesome.
Visit the show notes on patreon.com/startmeup. And Tara, thanks again. It was awesome talking to you.
Thank you.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And Future Stronger You can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 31st. See Home Club for details.